Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, Matt.
Hello, how are you doing?
Very well, yes.
I think we always open with exactly the same. Maybe we should do
that. I know.
We could just do something different.
Yeah, well, or just reuse the same stuff we've already used.
Yeah, save our
save us 30 seconds, yeah.
But how are things? All well?
Yeah, good. As you know, I've been going through chemo for the last 18 weeks, so I've got the final round coming up, which I'm very excited about to get that behind me. It's in some ways it's been a long old slog, but in other ways it's passed relatively quickly. So yeah, keen to get that done, start the recovery, and then we've got summer ahead and longer days. It's just starting to feel a bit more optimistic and get my head around it all.
That's quite nice as well. When they're sort of coming into spring, it sort of feels more hopeful and positive as well, just generally when you look out the window. Yeah.
It's been a long winter, but when you see the first few daffodils poking their heads out.
Yeah.
And you know that spring's on its way. Yeah, it's morale is getting higher every day. So yeah, good. Can't complain. What about yourself? What have you been up to?
Not a lot. We've got a sick child at home.
Yeah,
he's not been very well at all. I keep on thinking he's going to go in, but he's been off for 4 days. But that's, but I mean, he's all right. It's quite nice actually having his company at home. He's sort of suddenly, I forget he's here and then suddenly he pops up.
Just keep a distance though. You don't want to get sick, you know.
No, we've got an important job here to do. I'll keep my distance. Otherwise, well, how would our listener cope without us?
You've got millions of fans out there waiting for a Wednesday when Sporting Misadventures drops onto the internet.
There are genuinely a few, perhaps more than you sometimes think, that get excited by it. Like there's sort of, it's Wednesday. I'd like to think there are beyond one or two people that actually genuinely look forward to it on a Wednesday, which is nice. It's nice. You can let us know as well.
I met another listener today, Vicky. Shout out to Vicky. Oh. And I sort of tested her on a few. I thought she can't really be, maybe you've seen it or you've heard of it. But she's a regular listener. So thank you. That's three now, isn't it? We've got Steve, Vicky, Clayton.
And I bumped into someone here locally who just tapped me on the shoulder and said, love the Andy Hamilton episode. I mean, I do know this person.
Yeah.
It's quite nice. So.
I had a bit of feedback about that one. It was really nice to hear that. We're obviously massive fans of Andy Hamilton. It's nice when other people have the same view.
Yeah. So, he's a lovely guy, actually. And he was really sweet. He sent a nice message and said, sending his best to you and hope you're all well.
Oh,
and,
lovely.
What a dude. So, and he's made some amazingly good TV. But for some reason, all I can stick with is him being Mr. Elephant, the dentist from Peppa Pig, which is probably not what he wants as the overriding message.
No, with him, but. It's not your crowning glory. But considering what he's achieved, it's astounding. You look back over the Palmares, his TV.
And you know today's guest, or you've done something with him before, is that right?
Yeah. So today's guest is Joel Dommett, who is, I guess, really well known for presenting shows like The Masked Singer. He was in Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, The Jungle. He started his career as an actor. He was in Casualty. He's been a stand-up comic. He has got an incredible, when you look through his filmography, the number of shows that he's been in, it's astounding. He's been working since, I think, 2005 or 2008, something like that. And he's smashing it just now. He's really shot to stardom. He's got a podcast with his wife. He's everywhere. And he's a really nice guy. I've only met him once, and we'll chat about that later on. Hopefully not too much, because I cringe every time I think about that day. But, he was really into his CrossFit and into gym training, but I'll be curious to see what his sporting passions are and what sports he's interested in. What
I think
he did.
He's done some marathons as well. I don't know how many.
Ah.
Definitely a couple. I think, you know, he seems to be quite a keen runner. He sort of pops up on social media with a 10K or a half marathon, but he's clearly a fit guy. So he's definitely sport-centric, one of our more sport-centric guests, so he should be good.
Yeah, cool.
Hello, hello.
Hey.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, really well, man. Really well. Love your little dark corner of your office.
Well, this used to be all white, so this is the back bedroom. It's got the best internet. It's the quietest part from screaming kids and all that. And it was always white, and we give it a lick of paint, and it's quite dark and dingy.
Absolutely. We've got it lit up, though. Fantastic.
Well, thank you.
Give me 2 seconds. I'm just going to make sure this microphone's into this computer.
Yep.
I just realised it's not. And then it will sound crispy.
He's a professional, Matt. He knows what
yes.
he's doing.
Not like us. I'm like us jokers.
And then hopefully, if I do that, select a microphone, it should be... Does it sound crispy?
That's putting ours to shame.
Crispy,
but bass. I love it.
That is what you there need. You don't. You got to do everything you can to stop this annoying voice that I have.
I like your backdrop as well.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
thank you.
Good audio and good visual.
It's a fake plant, completely fake, completely
like
fake, because it's an entirely dark room. So
that's what I need in here.
That's what you need—a fake plant.
Some plastic trees. Yeah.
IKEA.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, really, man,
appreciate this, because I know you're a busy, busy man. Have you met Matt before? I don't think you have.
Hey, Matt.
No,
I feel like have we not met before?
I don't think so. I feel like I know you because I've seen you in so many different things, but no, I don't think we've crossed paths before.
I apologize for that.
I mean, in a good way. Chris was reeling off some of the things you've done. It's an amazing list and varied list of stuff.
I feel lucky. I feel very lucky. I feel like I've somehow got to this point in my career without being found out. And I'm sure people will very soon be like, oh, yeah, he's not talented, is he? So, okay.
And the highlight was going on the wheel with Chris, who slightly cringes at revisiting.
We're not bringing this up straight away, are we?
I thought I'd just have a soft beginning. Chris hates his appearance on the wheel.
Oh, God.
Mate, I've been on it twice. The first time I went on it was so embarrassing. And I sort of had a topic almost like forced on me. That was like heavy metal, and I thought they were going to go more with the sort of metal stuff that I know about, but they went with like heavy metal, as in like old school heavy metal, Black Sabbath, AC/DC. They went with all that stuff, which I don't really know too much about. And so basically, I just got every single question wrong, including my own, and came absolutely bottom of the pile. And so, don't you worry, Chris.
Well, you make me feel better. I couldn't watch it. I've never seen it. And it was one of these ones. It was a long time after filming before it actually was aired. And then I started thinking, it's a bit like if you get flashed by a speed camera and you don't get the letter through the post. You think, maybe I wasn't speeding. Maybe it wasn't me. Maybe it was another car next to me. And you convince yourself, actually, yeah, it's not going to happen. And then the letter pops through the letterbox and 6 months later. And it was the same with that. I thought, maybe there's a problem, but it's not going to be aired. Maybe I'm going to be let off with this humiliation. But I came second last. Bez was just behind me.
Yeah.
And his specialist topic was bees. And then when he got a bee question, he's like, basically, I don't know. I mean, I'm not an expert. And Michael's like, you literally are an expert. You are the expert.
That's what
you
picked.
This is the subject you've chosen. So,
yeah.
But I was just...
What did you pick? Did you pick Olympics or cycling?
Yeah, it ended up being Olympics.
Yeah.
And for people that haven't seen the show, basically there's a big wheel, circular stage that rotates around. You've got the seats that you sit on it. You've got various celebrity guests who choose their specialised topic. But you don't just get specialised questions, do you? You get random, you know, as the wheel spins around, it stops on you, and you could get a question on dressmaking or bees or whatever. And... yeah, I got a lot of questions that weren't my specialist subject. And I was just, they were quite hard as well. And most shows that are sort of the celebrity shows, you find the questions are fairly straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
They make it easier, I think, than they do for the general public. But this felt to me like the questions were pretty hard.
It's hard.
I just kept getting them wrong. And I just kept going, oh God, that's another one I got wrong.
Don't you worry.
It went on It went on forever, and it was... Do you remember, so Robert Peston was there, political guru, and his phone was buzzing away, and it was a day where Boris Johnson had just done something again, or, you know, it was another absolute, you know, political crisis happening, and he had to get back into London for the 6 o'clock news, or basically, you know, we had to finish the show, and it went on for ages. It was about...
Yeah, it was long.
4 hours or something, and he was just like, right, I need to get, you know, I'm not joking, but we need to get this done. And do you remember, the celebrity, the contestants, and people, I think it's all rigged, but it's random. It wasn't rigged in terms of who comes up. And it was the same one kept coming up, and they got the question wrong, went back down again.
Yeah.
And eventually this one woman who was on at the very beginning and then only popped out at the very end, popped up, got it right, won the game.
Won everything.
And everybody was like, oh, thank God. But
it was... To keep doing wheel anecdotes, the first time I was on that show, I was on it with Chris Eubank, and I got so many questions wrong that he went, sorry, can I just ask, why are you here? And I was like, I don't know, Chris. And it was filmed in like the height of summer, and there was a point where we just stopped for like 2 seconds, and then suddenly Chris was gone, and we didn't know where he'd gone. And so the filming stopped for about 20 minutes because everyone was sort of looking for him. And then Michael McIntyre came up to me and just sort of whispered over whilst we were stopped filming. He goes, apparently they found him. He's in his dressing room, and he's just in his boxer shorts. And he's told everyone that he just needs to, like, cool down a bit.
Wow.
Oh, I love that man. I love him so much.
He is his own man.
Yes, that's what you expect from him, and that's what I love about Chris.
And you think it's a little bit of an act. You think it's a little bit of a, you know, a play a persona in the way that the boxers do. You know, a bit of theater, but it's exactly who he is.
I've met him a couple of times.
He was at. They had this little format for Sports Personality years ago. I think back 2004, around about that time, and they had it like a cafe scenario. These little circular tables, maybe 4 or 5 people around each table. And then the stage, and I was sitting next to Chris Eubank randomly, and he had his cane, obviously, with the big jewel on the end of it, and he'd rested it on the table instead of putting it on the floor or maybe on his side. He put it on the table, and inevitably halfway through the show, live show, this cane started to roll off the and I saw it going and thought, oh God, and it went slam on the ground, made an absolute racket, everybody turned round, and including Chris Eubank, who looked at me as if like, why is your cane falling on the ground? Basically, passed it off as my fault, and I was remember thinking, I didn't bring a cane to Sports Personality. Yeah. Anyway,
love him.
I interviewed him for my day job. I did sports writer for the Evening Standard, and interviewed him with Nigel Benn, which was such a good get to get.
Amazing,
you know, classic fights, and he just goes off on this tangent for about 15-20 minutes about palm trees and beaches, and I'm just. No idea what's going on. And then he finished this thing, and Nigel Benn just looks at me. You can see I'm confused. Goes, don't worry, mate. Happens all the time. he's so used to this. And he just glossed over. I'm just looking bemused. And he just lets it drift past him. But
it's so amazing, isn't it? I get in these weird YouTube holes where I just like watch old boxing fights and stuff. And yeah, he was so good, man. Yeah, he was so good.
Incredible. He was a thinker as well. I loved all the chat. You know, and I guess a bit like Muhammad Ali, he would come up with these amazing quotes and amazing turns of phrase. Mm. People were either bemused by him or it would polarize people. People like got angry about him and didn't like him. And then he had the complete opposite. The fans who were absolutely behind him. And I always loved watching him box. I think he was.
Did you ever think of doing anything like that in your cycling career? Coming out with quotes and some wonderful...
Punching my team, my rivals, you mean?
Man. Imagine punching someone at the top of the slant in the velodrome.
John, anyway. what are your sporting loves then? Are there many? I mean, you're quite a keen, you're quite an active chap anyway, but are there sports that you love for all sports or...?
I'm sort of an odd one really, because like I'm sort of awful for this podcast and great all at once. I sort of love all sports. I'm sort of that annoying person that like loves, you know, I'm sort of the person who loves that. I love all music. But I love all sport, and I just genuinely love activity. And I'm not someone who I watch football because I enjoy the game. I don't necessarily support anyone in particular. I used to have like season tickets to watch Bristol City and stuff when I was younger, but and similarly, I love going to watch rugby, and I also like I love athletics. I'm really into running, so I do a lot of running myself, and do a lot of gym stuff. I did CrossFit for sort of 10 or 12 years, and got really heavily into that. So I'm also into like powerlifting and weightlifting. I went into like a real sort of heavy hole of like Olympic weightlifting for about a year and a half, and so I really enjoyed that. But I also doing the sort of CrossFit element of stuff. I find gymnastics fascinating and incredible, the way that they can just fling themselves about, and they're so lean and incredible looking. And so I really do genuinely just love, my wife really laughs at me because when I can just watch any sport, like I love just watching any sport, just because I find it fascinating. And I feel like I really understand how difficult it is to be great at anything. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like a lot of people would, Olympic weightlifting is a perfect example, because I feel like a lot of people might just watch Olympic weightlifting and be like, what are these like people doing? Especially like super heavyweights who are like so massive, and like to a normal everyday person, they might look at them and think they're unfit, you know, but they're so incredible. And they're just like, the way that they're huge, like will weigh something like 160 kilos or something ridiculous, and they can like drop into the splits anytime that they want. They're so flexible and incredibly strong.
And the speed with which, I remember watching a video of a heavyweight Olympic standard weightlifter doing box jumps. So, you know,
yeah.
Using the boxes, it's starting at low, getting higher and higher. And it almost looked like it was fake.
It looks like it's in reverse.
Yeah. The guy, he's so big. He's, as you say, massive unit of a guy. And yet looks like a ballerina, just jumping mm-hmm. up, popping up with real precision. And I think people just look at the heavyweights in particular and think, well, they're just strong. They're just big guys or big girls, and they just can pick up the weight. And that's, how's that sport?
Mm.
But you just dip your toe into that world of lifting. We did a fair bit of lifting for cycling as sprinters. And you start, when you look at the weights they're lifting, and you know what half that weight feels like, and that's your personal best
or
whatever, and you know that looking twice that or more than twice that, and you go, and this, as you say, the flexibility, the balance, the mobility, and the speed with which they move. It's not just a big sort of big massive unit that's just grunting the weight slowly up. It's so impressive. And it's one of the sports that I always watch and look out for at the Olympics now. It's one that I'm fascinated by, and I watch videos on Instagram over and over again of these different lifters. And then the opposite end of the spectrum, the tiny little ones are in the 55 kilo category.
Yeah.
And it's just like, how on earth are you lifting that weight? And
it's unbelievable.
You've got to slow it down to watch the speed under the bar. They're actually going fast than gravity under to catch when they're doing the jerk, clean and jerk or the snatch. It's just, amazing.
And the fact that it's just, it's one, it's like they have essentially three tries, you know, and they have like 4 years to train for this, their whole lives to get to this point where it all rests on three tries. Mm-hmm. And that level, I mean, it's the same for you guys, but it's like there's no margin for error at all, you know. Mm-hmm. I just find it fascinating watching, and that's why I love the Olympics. I love just watching people just be the best at something. And it really annoys me that I feel like people don't appreciate how difficult everything is. I really do think that they should do every Olympic event, every sport, every sport should start with just a regular person who thinks that they're fit-ish trying to do it, throwing a javelin and just throwing it into the floor 8 foot away from them, trying to throw a shot put and it just like smash it, you know, just a guy from the pub that they've grabbed who goes like, yeah, I could do shot put, I could do that, I could cycle around in a circle, I could do that. just get them and get them to try it. We'll all have a laugh. And then Chris Hoy comes along and absolutely smashes it. I just feel like we'd all appreciate it more, you know?
That's good TV. That sounds a great series. I think you've got your next job lined up.
Well, do you know, was it Mike Bush who ran in the British indoor, was it the 60-meter sprint? He entered that for that very reason, to show the contrast between himself
mm-hmm.
and the rest of these elite athletes. And over 60 meters, he was out of the shot already. Within the first 20 meters, he wasn't even in the frame. And you're right, though, because we were discussing this in the last podcast, weren't we, Matt, about how professionals, how the very best, make it look so easy.
Yeah.
And then you can be mistaken for thinking it is easy, mm-hmm. whether it's Formula One or weightlifting or running or whatever, or snooker. It's just, it looks, they make it look effortless.
Or comedy in a weird way. And I know it's the other side of thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm not saying I make it look easy. Definitely at times I make it look very, very hard. But that's the thing that everyone sort of says when you're good at it, you know, you make it look easy. And it's sort of our job, I suppose, is to do it. And people go like, oh, I reckon I could do that. And then they do it and then they realize it's really hard. It's same with presenting. Again, it's another thing where you do that and everyone sort of says, and it's just like, you just get used to it. Don't you? It's your job. So like, I just get used to the fact that I'm reading, but trying to not make it look like reading at the same time as having someone speaking in my ear, at the same time as sort of doing this and this and this. You know, it's I like doing things a lot to try and make it feel like I'm not shit.
At live TV, I find absolutely fascinating, and I've done a very little, you know, I've got very limited experience of doing live TV as a pundit with the cycling once every few years, but when you go to something like Sports Personality, for example, a massive live show, like, you know, The Masked Singer, all the shows that you do, are they live or are they recorded as live and then out a later date?
Masked Singer isn't live. It's filmed a couple of months before, but just for the sort of point of secrecy and stuff like that, I suppose. But then I do the NTAs, which is live, and that's at the O2. And then Comic Relief I did last week, which is a really fascinating one. And I find it, and in fact, this is interesting. I mean, it's like, it might be boring, but I sort of approach it like sports in a weird way, because I've always been interested in sports and sort of, and especially when I was doing sort of functional fitnessy stuff and my running and things, I know how much of a heart rate is so important, and sort of getting your heart rate into that zone where you can operate well, you know. And I remember I was doing Extra Camp, which was like the extra show of The Jungle, and it was my first proper live television job, and I did it for 3 years. And the first year I did it, I was just all over the place. Like, I would always get the auto cue wrong. I'd always just like, I just couldn't really like I felt like I couldn't operate well. And in rehearsal, I'd do it perfectly. Everything would go well. I would like, would feel funny. I'd feel like everything would just, was the gears felt like they were greased. And it was like, and then the real thing would happen. And obviously what's happening is my heart rate's going up because I'm scared and I'm nervous and it's, and so everything falls apart. And so the first year I felt like, I mean, I literally used to go home and call my wife, which would be like 11 o'clock at night at that point. And she wasn't my wife at that point. And I would like cry on the phone and be like, I messed this up. I messed up this link. I'm awful at this. They're never going to ask me back. And then lo and behold, they did ask me back. And I did a second year. And I felt like I was just way better at it the second year, because I feel like I worked out that it is really comparable to how your resting heartbeat is. So I'd have like I literally got my Garmin watch on, and then you before the show in the first year, we'd get all really excited and we'd be like, oh, we're doing it, here's the titles, and you go on and you're so fucking up here, so you've got nowhere to go. And then I sort of became a bit of like a sort of psychopath with it, where like, instead now, before any job, still to this day, see, if I'm going on stage at the NTAs, you're in front of 15,000 people at the O2, 5 million people are watching at home. You've also got all of your peers in front of you. You've got Anton Dex out there. You've got Michael McIntyre, Graham Norton, all those people who would undoubtedly do a better job than me. And so it's quite a lot of pressure. But like, I know all I have to do is I have to get my heart rate down and not get worried by it. So I just try and treat it like in the same way I would do if I'm doing like a workout or something, or like a long conditioning piece or something. It's just about controlling your heart rate and keeping it down. So I just try and control the things I can control. And I just try and think of it about, like people are always like, are you not nervous? And I'm like, no, it's fine. I think of it as just reading. Like I go on I do like the NTAs. I think it's just reading. And then it makes me like feel less nervous with it. It brings my heart rate down. I genuinely try and look at my heart rate to see sort of where it is and try and get it down to a certain place. And then I feel like I can go out and those cogs are greased, like I said. And I feel like I'm then in control of everything. Mm. Otherwise, if your heart rate is high, it feels like everything falls apart. I don't know whether it's the same with sports.
So interesting to hear you say that, because it sounds like the same mental approach certainly that I used to do, and I know a lot of other athletes do, about if you start to get yourself too hyped up, if you start to look around and to consider the consequences of success or failure, and you worry about things that are out of your control, like you're saying, all I'm doing is going out there and reading off an auto cue. In the same way, it was like, all I've got to do is focus on riding my bike in anticlockwise circles and knowing that I'm going to start my move here. I'm going to, you know, this is the plan of attack. This is the strategy. I've done it 1,000 times in training. I'm going to do it now. And you're right. Controlling your breathing, controlling your heart rate. You need to get your heart rate up to be physically warmed up, ready to go. But it's also controlling the adrenaline. And it's that, if you look at the kind of adrenaline curve, this arousal curve, as they call it, state of arousal, but it's this, you know, the adrenaline is rising, and it peaks. And if it goes too high, it just falls off a cliff in terms of your ability to perform and to function the way you want to. So it's about getting that adrenaline up to that right point, but not going too far. So that right state of excitement and focus and preparation, but not being so hyped up that you make stupid decisions and you don't do what you want to do and you're not in control.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. I tried to sort of, my sort of mantra, I think, is, which is an awful word to use, but my sort of thing I like to think, I just try and prepare as much as you can. And then when you're there, don't give a shit.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's kind of the best way to live your life, you know?
Yeah. Don't fear the consequences.
Exactly. And I think that's so much with comedy, is that everyone goes, I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you do that. I've been doing it for 16 years and it's like, I don't really think of the consequences anymore. It doesn't feel like, you know, if I have a bad gig, I don't really mind. Because I don't, you know, you've just learnt that that's okay. You know?
Is that also a sign that you've had so much success? So it's like, if you've done 1,000 gigs, 950 have been really successful, and you've had 50 or 10 that have been horrendous. And you
won't trust me, Chris, I've had way more than that. I appreciate you lowering that to 10 for me, but wow.
But if that happened in the first, say you had your first 50 gigs and 30 of them were awful and you had a terrible experience, whereas when you've done 900 and they've been great, you know, well, do you know what? That audience, I wasn't for them, or maybe I wasn't quite where I wanted to be tonight. Or maybe actually it was all their fault because they were miserable and they didn't want to be there.
Yeah, you kind of know your way out of it a lot of the time. So it's like, you know, the more you do it, you know that there's sort of, you've got a route map in your head and you kind of know there's a way out. Whereas when you're new, you don't really know that way out yet. You don't really know how to put your car into reverse and get out of the cul-de-sac, you know? Yeah, and you also learn to care less, but it's that's also what is funny is that I think generally comedians are pretty good people in like, you know, I'm sure the people you've met are pretty nice. Most of them nowadays are pretty nice because we are all constantly being humbled all the time by a gig that can completely come out of nowhere. So because there's a really fine line between ego and confidence in comedy. And I think you've got to have this confidence, but as soon as you slip into like this ego, there's nothing more unattractive to someone in an audience than someone who like knows they're funny, you know? I feel like we're all pretty decent people because even no matter how famous you become or how huge you become as a comic or how many TV shows you're on, you've still got to be funny, and you've still got these gigs where you go out and then like everyone's like, no, it's not good enough, and you're like, okay, I've got to work harder, I've got to keep working, and you basically can't ever relax. It's hard. It's interesting.
One, is there one that gives you a bigger buzz, that doing the stand-up or presenting or acting? Is there like, or even the sport bit, is there one that you love above all others, or is that?
I think it's like it's an interest, because I used to always say comedy to that question. I still get, because it is such an immediate buzz. Like, it's, you come up with something in your head, you say it out your face, and then people immediately tell you whether it's good or not. It's like such a quick process. Whereas presenting is like a much longer process, where it's like, you've got to write the scripts, you've then got an auto cue involved, and then you've got this, and then you've got the cameras, and then you get dressed, and then you've got and then you've got makeup, and it becomes this huge thing. And then you've probably got 3 months of it being edited, and then and so it's a much longer process. But I feel like I've been really lucky in the last 3 or 4 years, where the jobs that have come in my lap in terms of presenting have been so fun and so varied that I've really learned to like enjoy it so much. And I do feel like I genuinely get that same sort of buzz that I get out of comedy, but just in a completely different fashion. Like, it's I like doing Survivor. It's such a fun thing. And you're just doing Masked Singer is so fun. And when you see what it really means to the families who watch something like Survivor or Masked Singer, it gives me that same buzz now, because I feel like I've really understood what it really means to people who watch it, you know? But stand-up is great, and I really love that sort of immediate punch that you get from it. But I think you can only entertain that little bunch of like 500 people or whatever it is in that moment, you know? But I do like to answer your question in a really long and boring fashion.
No, it's a good answer. I liked it.
Great answer.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Do you find then, you know, you obviously have the skills to deal with the pressure of live TV and dealing with live audiences and comedy. Are you able to apply those skills to sport? So if you're running, I know you do about 10Ks, marathons, you do sporting events. When you've been in those moments, are you able to say, well, I know how to deal with this? Or is it because it's so far out of your normal comfort zone? Like for me, the equivalent is, well, if you can deal with it in sport, why are you not completely chilled in front of the camera when it's live TV? You know, because for me, it's not my massive skill set. I don't really know what I'm doing, so I'm terrified. How about you? How do you deal with sport? Are you quite calm in that situation?
I'm kind of calm, I suppose. I feel like but I'm calm because it's not my job. So it's like, it's sort of the opposite way around, where I feel like I do the sports stuff to really to help me be better at my job. And I genuinely do think it really helps me with my job. It really does. From the point that like my job by its nature doesn't have any routine or structure. Like one day I could be filming from 6 a.m. till 12 p.m. at night. And the next day I could be doing nothing. The next day after that, I might be doing a few little bits. You know, every day is so unbelievably different. And I think what a lot of other people struggle with is that structure that that some months you might be so busy, you might have to be away from your family, and then you're just seemingly unemployed for a bit. And it's hard mentally to sort of understand that, I think. Whereas sport for me gives me that structure that I really need in my life to just help me be sort of, give me that clarity of mind, I suppose, just from day to day. Like if I'm not doing anything today, then I know, I look at my program and I go, okay, cool. I've got to do 10K today and I've got to do it at this pace and I've got to do this. Okay, tomorrow I've got to do an accessory bodybuilding session. I've got to do this, 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 this. It like gives you a real focus when you've got nothing to focus on. And me personally, that's what really helps me. And then into a practical sense of it, when it gets to like, say I'm doing a quiz show, or Extra Camp was another perfect example, when it was such long days, when it would, you'd have to get in really late at night, because it was filmed in Australia. And so you'd start filming at like 10 o'clock in the evening, and then it would go all the way through the night, sometimes to like 12 midday. And you'd be doing this, 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 you'd be writing, you'd be going there, and then you have to go and do a trial and do. And it's the same with like a quiz show, when you're like doing two shows back to back. So you have to like be talking to the contestants and doing this, and you have to be on all the time from like the moment you step on set to the moment you leave. And people are like, how do you have the energy? And I genuinely feel like I have the energy because I love fitness and I love being like physically and as much as I can mentally fit to sort of, you know, because I know it's not as hard as doing, you know, 150 calories on an air bike or like, you know, running 10K and trying to do it in under 40 minutes or whatever. That for me is like really hard energy wise. And then when I get in to do a double record for In With A Shout, which is my ITV show, people are like, oh, how do you still have energy at like 9 o'clock at night when you've been working since like six, and how you still sort of on, you know, going like, oh, I've got it. And I think that energy comes from me just genuinely enjoying fitness and having that as part of my routine and my daily life, you know.
It's funny because when people aren't into exercise or fitness or sport, they assume that you have X amount of energy for a day and that will take away a chunk of your energy for the day. And yes, of course, you've got to invest effort into that session, but what you get back from it, and not just on that single day, but long-term, as you say, you have the fitness, the energy, the ability to do more, and the mental benefit as well. You know, totally. All these little things that are frustrating you or you're thinking about negativity, you go and do a session and you bounce back and you go, oh, yeah, what was I worried about? You don't even think about it. It's amazing.
Totally.
The mental and the physical spin-offs that you get from it.
Especially now, I really think that like you've got that added sort of peak of dopamine that you get from doing exercise. But you've also like, it takes me away from screen time generally, because it's like, you know, a lot of us, we're in our jobs, we're on, you know, laptops and we're on phones and we're on it all the time. And if I now know that I'm going to go away and do a run, or I'm going to go into the gym and do some stuff, it's like just gets me away from firstly thinking about anything in particular that's like, you know, my to-do list of the day, but also just gets me like away from screen time and just gets me focused. My wife always knows that like when I haven't exercised for like 3 days, because I just start to get a bit like, I just like stare at walls for longer. Do you know what I mean? I just sit there, I stare at a wall. She's like, you need to go and exercise.
Swiping.
Yeah, exactly. Just, where am I?
Minority Report style.
So, yeah, exactly that. Exactly that. How much do you still do, Chris? Do you like, is it part of your daily routine to still sort of get on a bike, or do you not do that anymore? Or
yeah, it's very much like you were describing. My life post cycling competitively has been, there is no normal week. There's no structure. It comes in fits and starts, the work. It's varied. And I love that. It's one of the best things about being retired from cycling is that you have this variety and balance in your life. But I need routine, and therefore exercise becomes my structure. Everything else is all over the place, but the exercise, I make sure I do something every day. And you know, I don't go out on the bike as often as I'd like because it takes time. You've got to get the bike ready, all your kits on, fill the bottles up. You come back after a wet ride, you've got to clean the bike and all that stuff. Whereas the indoor bike, you know, hopping on a stationary bike, you could go on Zwift or any of the different virtual platforms and you can do half an hour. You could do intervals, half an hour, 30-second sprints, minute recovery, absolutely destroy yourself, including a warm-up and a warm-down. And therefore, you get something out of that day. So and for me, it's consistency. If I stop for too long, exactly the same way you're describing, I get grumpy, I get lethargic. Yeah. The less I do, the less I want to do. But if you can keep that consistency going and finding a way to do it, or, you know, gym as well, doing a bit in the gym. Like during the pandemic, I've got a squat rack in my garage here at Gibby.
Yeah.
You know, because I knew there were so many folk were desperate to go to a gym. They didn't have access to a gym. They couldn't go out. So I thought, I've got to make the most of having this. You know, for the people that can't go to the gym, I'm going to have to really make the most of it. I don't want to rub their noses in it. But but it was, I thought, I'm going to see if I can get close to my old time one rep max for the squat and do nothing, not ride my bike, just going to focus on lifting for a while. And it was great.
What was your one rep max on your back squat, Chris? Well, come on, let us know. Your thighs.
All time was 240.
Wow.
I got up to 235 in pandemic.
Unbelievable, man.
But my wife would come through and be like, what are you doing? You're 45 years of age. You're gonna, you know. And like, sort of walking through all hunched out. Too far, or she'll hear the screams and shouts, so you know I'll be slapping my legs and getting psyched up, and the kids will come through like, "Was daddy shouting?"
Is he? I know.
Yeah, he's fine. He's having a midlife crisis.
Lunacy.
He's okay.
Yeah.
My wife laughs at me so much, man. The grunting that I do in my garage, and it's like the things that you have to do to get yourself in the right headspace to be able to go for like a one rep max on a deadlift or a big. It's like, because you've got to go past this point of like, you've got to like not really care. You've obviously put the prep in. You've done your 12 week whatever week plan to get to this point where you've got, and you've really just got to grind. You've got to like. And my wife definitely doesn't understand the noises that are coming from the garage there.
Did you ever compete in powerlifting or in CrossFit or anything like that?
Yeah, I've done lots of competitions and stuff in the CrossFit stuff. Not like anything you know great or anything, but that's something that was really wonderful. Actually, I think CrossFit really brought that sort of gym space is that the sort of how important community is to people. And now there's loads of these amazing things, these sort of, there's the high rock stuff and all this stuff where you know, it's about getting people of like-minded people together who love fitness and love just movement and just all of us doing it together and comparing times and enjoying ourselves and working hard to get to that point. And it's, it feels like fitness is in a really exciting time right now. It feels like we're all starting to understand that different people do different things and not necessarily sort of being snarky or like, oh, look at you with your deadlift. It's really massive and you can't run 5 meters. You know, we're all understanding that everyone has different disciplines and it's really fucking impressive, you know? And I really love doing that stuff. I think it's really, really fun. And at the moment I feel like I sort of jump from thing to thing. Sort of every year I seem to be sort of changing my sort of plan. At the moment, since my son was born 5 months ago, 6 months ago now. And since he was born, I just find it much easier to be like, see you later, I'm just going to pop out for a run for like half an hour instead of be like, oh, I'm just going to sit in the gym in the garage, you know, and kind of have 3 minutes between sets and stuff. Yeah. It feels like I'm
on your phone getting distracted.
Exactly. Yeah. So I feel like running, I found running again, which I've really enjoyed. I feel like running was always kind of my thing. And I sort of enjoy trying to get a bit fitter and a bit more muscular and a bit more powerful with you know, all the sort of compound lifts and stuff. But it's nice to go back to running now and just have that time that you want to beat and go like, oh yeah, I'm nearly 40, but I can still, you know, I can still do it.
Can I ask about the marathons? Because you've done how many of those?
Done 3 marathons.
And enjoyed them or?
In different ways, I suppose. The first one I just did because I was like, oh, let's see, what's this like? And
was that, London, was it?
That was Edinburgh, my first one. And I just went up and just did it alone. I just didn't even think. I just applied for it, went up to Edinburgh, ran it. I think I'd just broken up with a girlfriend at the time. So I remember calling her afterwards, even though I'd broken up with her, just crying down the phone. And just like, oh. And then
see what you've thrown away.
Exactly.
I'm a marathon runner now.
Yeah. I'm a catch. I'm a real catch.
You should never have left.
And then I've done a few more, and then did London, which was great and amazing. And then I'm gonna do London again this year, which is really exciting, and I'm doing it in Piranha, the Piranha costume from Masked Singer. So the costume that won Masked Singer, which Danny Jones was in, they're somehow allowing me to run London Marathon in that costume.
Wow.
And
how do you train for that? Have you got to be carrying weight around?
A little bit. I'm trying to. I've sort of been told that it doesn't really help your training too much if you run with like a weighted vest or anything like that. You're better off just sort of dealing. So I'm running with like hoodies on and beanies and stuff to sort of simulate some sort of heat. And
is it completely enclosed? Your face is within it.
It's basically enclosed. It does have face that I can sort of take off and get a bit of air. So that's good. But it's gonna be tough. I'm gonna try and do it sub-4 in the costume.
Oh my word, that'd be impressive. Wow. Jeez.
Because apparently that's the fastest a fish has ever done it. So I'm gonna try and be the fastest fish, and it'll be a Guinness Book World Record. So
oh wow.
Hopefully I'll give it a go. And then I think I'm gonna do one more marathon this year. And then maybe park marathons for a bit. But I think I'm going to do Amsterdam maybe in October and try and run it myself and see if I could just... I'm going to train for sub-3 and then see whether I can do it. And then...
It's a quite flat course then. I think it's quite a good one.
So, yeah. I think it's quite a good one. And I feel like as well, the whole of Holland, I think, is fairly flat. So yeah. Hopefully it'll be a good one. And then... Because I feel like I'm at that age now. I'm 38. And I feel like I've got it in me to at least train for it as hard as I can. And then if I can't get it, I really tried, and then I can move on with my life.
So here's a question for you. Any sport at all, if you had, let's say you weren't 30, you were 28 or you were 18 and you had the opportunity to really throw yourself at a sport for 4 or 5 years. Well, maybe not even excel, just to see how far you could go. So you don't have to think, well, I couldn't do that. If you had a complete blank canvas and you had the opportunity to train full time for it and you had a coach and you had facilities, what would you love to do that you haven't done already?
And such a good question.
It's, you know, literally the blank canvas, anything at all.
The problem is these days, it's like 28 is not, you need to start when you're 8.
You know? Let's say you're 8.
I'm 8.
Yeah, you go to a specific sports school and you're going to get, you know, all the opportunities, and this could be a career for you. What would you choose?
Well, I'd love to say sort of football, because then you're sort of, money-wise, you're probably going into the right realm in terms of that. But if you're not to pick it in terms of that, I genuinely do think something... Now I'm older, I feel like something that like sort of gives you a bit of longevity, you know?
What sport do you admire? When you watch them, I mean, you mentioned gymnastics earlier on, but what do you think? For me, I look at a lot of the extreme sports. I look at things like skiing or like in the X Games, the downhill snow, you know, the snowboarders the mountain bikers that do these massive, huge canyon jumps, backflips, and the consequences of getting it wrong, and they seem to just smash out of the park every time. I think a lot of the X Games stuff, to me,
that's so interesting.
I would be like, what? Like my 10-year-old self would be like, that's a job, you can do that for a living, you know, you get paid to ride your bike. That to me would be amazing.
That is mad. Have you ever thought of going into like mountain biking, like a sort of thing of like, I mean, you'd get down quicker than anybody else.
Well, to a point, until you have to turn the corner and then crash into a tree. I did BMX as a kid, then I did mountain biking when it was really a new sport. Before the full suspension bikes, it was like the hardtails and, you know, front suspension was just coming out, real early days. And then I tried the track and realized I was more of a sprinter than an endurance rider. But the downhill, no, I definitely got the skill, but I don't have the bravery that's required. It's a bit like motorsport, but even more extreme, because motorsport in cars, you've got roll cages, you've got runoff, you've got tire walls, you've got gravel pits to catch you. It's, I don't know, the mountain biking can be super dangerous, but I think the trade-off is the adrenaline. Have you seen some of these GoPro, the kind of one point of view videos? Like, have you seen the urban downhills?
Like in South America. Yeah. Love those.
And you think,
crazy.
Every single, you could pause a video at any point in that 4 or 5 minute run. There's a lamppost, there's a brick wall. You know, these aren't things that are going to move if you hit them. You're not going to have a small one. You're going to have a broken, you know, either concussion or a broken bone or an injury that's going to put you out for 6 months. And
the way that they throw their weight into a burn and they just like chuck it around. Oh my God, it blows my mind, man. But this is my point. That's why I can't answer your question very well. It's because I just fucking love sport, man. I just love it. I think everything's amazing. Like I feel like I really appreciate the human body and what it is capable of. And when I watch those people doing that mountain biking, I think, oh my God, that is unbelievable what they're doing physically, mentally, in terms of confidence, in terms of just not giving a shit and just throwing yourself down a mountain. It's insane. And yeah, I still, you know, and I look at what you do. Yes, it might not take like the same sort of level of like throwing yourself down a hill, but like the size of your legs, boy, it's unbelievable. I know the amount of training it takes to get legs like that. And like to be able to sprint that fast, you know, to have a 240 squat is like just, it's a really difficult thing to do. And so I just really appreciate everything. I think that's why I ended up doing sort of hybrid training anyway, which sort of involved this, you know, mixture of weights, gymnastics, athletics, calisthenics, and all that stuff, because I couldn't really pick one. So I really enjoyed doing it all. And then it made me just sort of gave me this appreciation for everything. And I watch rugby and I go, oh my God, man, how do these guys do that? Smash themselves into each other and do all that, you know, and it's still play an 80 minute game, you know, like at that size and be that fit, you know? And I find it would be hard to pick a sport. It really would be hard to pick a sport, but my thing was running. I did cross country in school and I loved cross country. And that was the thing that I had sort of a finesse for, I suppose, a sort of a natural thing for. I wasn't amazing. I wasn't the best in my school by any stretch. I almost got into county, but I didn't quite get into the county. So it's like always a bit annoying. And then always carried on running, and my 5K and 10K times and half marathon times are like okay, are like good enough for a normal human being. I know I can always go back to running to sort of feel like I can be a little bit competitive. And yet when I was doing all the weight training stuff, I really wasn't. I definitely don't have a natural flair for that. Like, you know, my heaviest squat was 160 kilos and my heaviest deadlifts is like 200, which is okay. But it's like,
it's your body weight, that's really good though, isn't it? Because you're not heavyweight. That must be well over twice your body weight, isn't it?
Yeah, I've sort of settled at about sort of 82 kilos usually, yeah. 80 to 82. But
that's a two times body weight squat.
Yeah,
is a bit like, I guess, I don't know, a 3 hour marathon, sub 3 hour. That's a sort of a, you know, it's a significant milestone to get to in that sport.
But it's I just love it. This is so fun. I love talking about all this stuff.
we need to ask you about your sporting misadventure, if you have one. So you can, and whether it's a negative or a calamitous or anything that's occurred over the years.
I must have something really bad.
You haven't had to do a poo during a marathon or anything like that.
My friend who I run with a lot, he gets the worst. Like he really, like, some people just get it, you know, like when you run, you just have that thing that happens that obviously just, you know, stimulates your bowels and makes you want to go.
Is it just the consistent, the jolting of the running movement? Is that what does it? Is it
I assume so. I mean, if they obviously give any advice to anyone listening to this podcast who's going to do any sort of running, I would say don't ever, ever use a marathon toilet. It's not worth it. It's absolutely not worth it. Just like hold it in, do it down your leg. Anything is better than stopping, going into. I learned that my first marathon when I went to Edinburgh. And, you know, because it's just basically what happens is that everyone trains and then they hear there's this thing of like, oh, you've got to use gels. No one trains using gels. And then they suddenly get to race day and they get all these gels that they've bought and they stuff them all in their face and their body just goes, what? And just wants to get rid of everything. And it, trust me, when I went into that toilet, the gels come out as they went in. It's a very, I've been to Glastonbury. And it's worse.
No.
It's worse.
Oh, gee whiz. I remember doing a mass start ride, not a race, but this they call it the Étape de Tour, and it's a stage of the Tour de France, 2 or 3 days before the Tour comes through, and amateurs can just turn up and ride. It's like a charity thing, and there are about 8,000 people, and it starts at 5 a.m., so you've got to get out of the hotel. You're up at, like, 4 o'clock or earlier. You try to cram some food down your throat, you have a drink, a couple of cups of coffee, but there's no time to then. You're not used to going to the toilet at that time in the morning. So you get your kit on, you go down to the start and you're standing waiting and inevitably the coffee starts to take hold and you've got to, you know, and also you're thinking, I've got to get rid of this before. I don't want to have to stop on this 7-hour ride and you go for a poo. So, you know, what am I going to do? So these toilets are just filled with these middle-aged men and women in cycling shoes with cleats on, trying to desperately evacuate themselves before this mammoth ride. And yeah, same sort of thing. But the,
awful.
And I think I've told the story as well before, I'm sure. I've only got a couple of anecdotes in my repertoire. We were queued up and this guy, we're in a line waiting for the toilets and there's all these plastic portals lined up. There was just this almighty bang and the door swung open and the guy had slipped, because he's got these plastic shoes and plastic cleats on, as he's crouching down, his foot has slipped and kicked the door and it's burst open and he's got his shorts on his ankles. He's desperately trying to reach to get the door shut to
oh my God,
hide his humiliation. And it was just like, that was a big life lesson. I thought, right, I've got to shut. That's never me.
I had to, last year I did the London Duathlon, which is in Richmond Park, and it's a 10K run. I think it's like a 44K bike, I think, and then a 5K run after it. And I'd ridden my static bike. I've got one in my garage, my C2 bike, which I use all the time. And I love doing that. But I'd never ridden a road bike. I've never done it. I've never done it. Had never had cleats. I've never been in them. I don't know how to use it. And I knew I wasn't going to be able to use it beforehand because I was like hiring a bike from the race. And so I bought some cleats. They arrived the day before.
Oh no!
And the day before, and then I got them, and so I literally had a chance to like try it once, getting on the bike and getting off the bike using these things, and I was like, okay, it's kind of all right. I think it's gonna be all right. And then like it was just mad. I mean, the whole thing was mad. I ran the first 10K way too quickly because I was excited, and which I do in every race, and I get too excited, and I go out of the gates way too quick, and I ruin myself. And then the 44K bike, it just destroyed me. Destroyed, because I'm not used to like, there's probably a technical term for the pulling up on the pedal as well as the pushing down.
Yeah.
And I felt like I did the first two laps good. And then the rest of it, I just fell apart. And everyone was going so fast past me on the hills because I was so scared of going so fast. So I was just like wobbling around and people were just like going past me. And then he'd get a corner at the end. And I was just like, it was awful. And then I eventually stepped off. I didn't fall off with the cleats, luckily. And then I stepped off the bike to do the last 5K run, man. And in all of the things that I've done, I think it's the most in pain I've ever been. It was awful. Having to run after that I just was like, I couldn't. I must have looked like I was 110 years old. I was sort of pacing, sort of like slowly but surely. I don't know what that time must have been, but it was awful. Fair play to anyone who can do, you know, ultra marathons and Ironmans and stuff like that, because I am. And well, Ironmans in particular, with the bike and run, swim, and all that stuff, is hats off to, because I can't. I'm just going from discipline to discipline like that is amazing. I've thought of a good misadventure. I've thought of a good one.
Well, that was a pretty.
That wasn't bad.
Yeah, that's
all right.
Yeah,
I had to. I did this show called Joel and Nish versus the World, which was basically the premise of the show was to find the sort of fittest communities in the entire world, and then we'd go live with them for a week, and then I'd end up sort of doing this sort of fitness thing with them. And I went with my comedian friend Nish Kumar, and we went all over the world. We did two series. It was Comedy Central. It was such a good show. And we went to Mexico to hang out with this tribe that are incredible ultra marathon runners. They're like amazing. They just run like hundreds, 100 miles, like is absolutely nothing, because it's just in their blood and in their DNA. And that's how they travel, because it's so remote. They go, I'm just going to go over and see my friend, and they'll just run for 40 miles, you know?
Wow.
And there's this amazing book. Oh, I can't remember the name of the book now. Free Runner, maybe, something like that. And it's this guy who basically goes out to visit them and tries to put them into these ultra marathon races that were becoming really big in the Western world. And these guys would just completely beat everybody, like hands down. And it was just, it's fascinating. But we went to this tribe, and Nish, my friend, would do all the sort of more sort of community aspect of stuff and sort of find out about the food that they eat and all of that stuff. And there was this energy drink, this natural energy drink that they would have. And I think it was called canole or something like that. And it's basically made out of corn and oil and all this different stuff. And so Nish made this energy drink for me, and I was like, oh, thank you so much. He made a big bottle of it. And he went, Joel, I've made this for you today. I was like, oh, thank you so much. And I, as a joke in this like final scene of the day, I just downed this entire bottle of this stuff that he got for me. I was like, I feel so strong. Yeah. And then woke up the next day early for this race, like you said. And we had to put on their natural, their sort of, their costume that they sort of wear, and that they've worn for years and years and years, which was like a red plumey sort of off the shoulder shirt thing, and a white skirt, essentially. And so then I had to go and do this ultra marathon run up and down hills, but bear in mind, like literally they run down these hills like they're goats. They just go, like, and I'm just like, what is going on? And we got to the start line, and they, the rest of the people that I'm racing against, I'm the only person in the traditional garb, which is the thing of the white skirt. The rest of the guys are like wearing Metallica t-shirts and jeans. And they're also all like, I'm going to say 50, 60 years old, all these guys that I'm running against. And so I was like, oh, this is going to be easy. Like, I like running. This is going to be fine. I'm going to be able to do all right at this. And they said how long the race was going to be, and they shortened it for me, right? And they shortened it to 34 miles, I think. I think it was something like 34 miles. And when they said 34 miles to these 20 other people that we were racing against, they all laughed because it was so short to them. And bear in mind, they're all wearing jeans, right? In the Mexico heat. And they go, go. And we all go off on this run. And we sort of start off, and I'm up there and I'm doing it. Mate, that I cannot tell you the amount of times they ran past me. I was being lapped. And I think the laps were something like 4-5 miles or something. So I was being lapped by them just to, wow. They kept on lapping me. They were unbelievable. And a couple of laps in, that's when my body starts to feel the effects of this energy drink that Nish had made for me. And it wasn't energy that it brought on, but it was essentially a laxative. And I then started to put it plainly, shit myself in a white skirt. And it was like awful. And I didn't know what to do. And I was having to like, oh, and I was like, and I'd stop and go into this bathroom and then nothing would happen. And I'd be like, I felt disgusting. And I was just, my bowels were like, it was one of the worst moments. No. I did this whole 32 miles. The guy who was like doing this, he was supposed to be keeping count of how many laps we'd done. This guy in the village, he was like the mayor of the village, and he had all these stones to try and work out who's done what laps and all that stuff. He just got so hammered that he didn't know who was doing what laps and what was going on. So I just had, and I'd been counting the laps because I knew how long I'd done. So I was like, that's me. I'm done. I've finished. I was like, yay. The rest of them, they kept on going because they all lost count. So they were like, we do another. They just kept on going. Honestly, the most unbelievable athletes, natural, incredible athletes. And I managed to finish the race without shitting on my white skirt, and I think that is my biggest sporting achievement of my career.
Well, fair play to you for actually completing it all, because normally you assume on TV, there's a bit of TV magic going on. You'll do a little bit, you'll stop, and if you weren't feeling well, you would just say, you know, I've had enough now. You can fake the ending, and that'll do. But you did it all.
I did it, man. I did it. It was a fascinating. It was a real. It was an amazing show. It really was, to go around all these places, and we did. Went to the Amazon, and this amazing tribe that had this race where they'd race, like, I think it was like 5K or something, with like a 100-kilo barrel on their shoulder. And it was like, oh, it was just awful. It was absolutely awful. And most of this stuff is done without any trainers on your feet. You know, it's literally like barefoot on a road, you know, running. Just wow. Amazing. So it was amazing. It was an amazing experience. Maybe that's where my sort of appreciation of various different achievements comes from, but yeah, it was fascinating. So that's my sport in this adventure, I suppose.
Great. Well, that's fantastic to end on. We should let you go, because we've gone over what we said.
I'm sorry.
No, I loved it. You've been an absolutely wonderful guest.
Fantastic guest. Thank you so much. What have you got going on? Anything you want to have a chat about, plug?
You can sponsor me on my London Marathon journey. It's on my bio, my Instagram, and it's for this charity called Shooting Star Trust, who provides end-of-life care to sort of young people and children. And they're an amazing charity. So if you've got time, go on to my Instagram and donate to my London Marathon cause, and come along. If you can't donate, then come along and watch me. If you see a fish, then it's probably me.
Running pretty quick.
Running, hopefully, quick as possible. Guinness Book World Record.
You'll do it, mate. You'll do it.
I'll do it, man. Honestly, it's such a pleasure, Chris. I'm such a fan of you, and you're a lovely human being. And well done on achieving so much in your life. You're a lovely man.
Thanks, Joe.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Take care, guys.
Take care, mate. Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.